So because of the news from Texas, I decided to set aside the sermon that I intended to give this morning, and I'll give it at another occasion. We've all seen the news reports. Texas officials say now that at least 44 deaths were related to or suspected to be related to the storm, and that number could still rise. About 42,000 people were housed at Red Cross and partner shelters in Texas. An estimated 40,000 homes are heavily damaged. 7,000 homes were destroyed. There is still no running water in Beaumont, Texas, after flooding shut down the two pumping stations. The Unitarian Church there is closed. Over the next few months and years, Texas faces a massive cleanup process. And this is just not in the United States. In Asia, at least 1,200 people have been killed and millions have been left homeless following devastating floods that have hit India, Bangladesh, and Nepal. It's one of the worst flooding disasters to affect that region in years. In some legal documents, these events are referred to as acts of God, outside of human control, acts for which no person or organization can be held responsible. And of course, it is difficult to sue God. Given that some people hold God responsible, after events like this, people turn to their clergy and ask us to explain why it happened. We foolishly try to provide answers. I heard one Christian minister say, "Natural disasters are a test from God." The minister says that the proper response to a flood is for us to reaffirm our faith. Now, this "God is testing you" answer to human suffering is part of the positive thinking philosophy that is prevalent in American theology. It suggests that even in the middle of the most difficult suffering, God is examining us to see if we will remain faithful and positive. It is a sin, according to the positive thinkers, to give in to our feelings of doubt and despair. They even say that we need not feel grief for those who died. Having completed their task here on earth, those who have died are now in heaven with God. Therefore, we should feel joy that they are in heaven, not sadness at their deaths. Now, I agree that it is good to have a positive mental outlook. However, I also believe that when something bad happens, it is normal, even healthy, to feel upset, at least for a time. The "God is testing you" theory has never reassured me. It has never helped me accept a terrible loss. If God is really testing people, then God is a cruel and sadistic force. If I really believed God is testing people with a hurricane, I would be deeply depressed. Now, because I do not believe God is testing us, I feel exasperated, frustrated, angry towards the people who preach such messages. At its worst, the "God is testing you" answer to flooding implies that if people become more faithful to the church, the flooding will end. So we hear people say, I prayed, and my home was spared." But what about all the other people who prayed and whose homes were flooded? Well, other religious traditions have other answers to this question, other perspectives. One response I heard a Buddhist give was to tell the story of how Buddhism started. It is a story about wealth and about suffering. About 2,600 years ago, a man named Siddhartha was born, the son of the wealthy, powerful ruler of a small kingdom in northern India. The boy's father kept his son in isolation in the palace, allowing him to live a life of luxury with a beautiful young wife. According to the story, in his 29th year, Siddhartha finally made his way out of the palace, where he saw old age, he saw illness, he saw death. He left behind his life of luxury and started the search for a solution to the problem of human suffering. He came to believe that human beings are trapped in a cycle of birth and death and reincarnation. Complete release from the cycle is attained by the direct experience of nirvana. To the victims of the hurricane, a Buddhist might say that life is a painful journey. The very nature of human existence is inherently difficult. Our suffering is caused by our selfish cravings and by our attachments. Craving and attachment can be overcome. When we completely transcend our selfish cravings, we enter a state of nirvana and the suffering ceases. Nirvana literally means blowing out in the way a flame or a candle is blown out. What we extinguish when we blow something out is our craving, our attachments to material things. As the victims of the hurricane look at their flooded homes and workplaces, a Buddhist might say to them, nothing is permanent. No form exists forever. So Buddhism reminds us not to take such material stuff too seriously. Well, personally, I'm very far from nirvana. I still have some cravings and attachments to such things as my books, my computer, and its ability to correct my spelling. It would be hard to imagine life without it. Still, a tragedy like a hurricane can remind us of how most of our material possessions are not necessary for our happiness. Of course, we need food and clothing and shelter to survive, and we sometimes need medical help to survive. Still, I suspect that on the Sunday after a hurricane, instead of being told that God is testing us, we might all find it easier to accept the fragile nature of life if the worship leader reminded us that beyond the basic necessities, our happiness does not depend on our owning many things. It can help to remind ourselves that all the stuff that got broken or soaked in the storm is just stuff, and we can be happy without so many things. Other religions have other beliefs. One Islamic scholar says that natural disasters such as hurricanes are the way God teaches us to live moral lives. The Quran describes how many natural disasters have wiped out nations in the past when they disobeyed Allah and crossed the divine limits. Now, when my children failed a class in school or got fired from a job or were in a car accident, I would try to cheer them up by saying to them, "Do not think of this as a failure. Think of it as a learning experience. In the same way, the Quran suggests that the suffering we experience in a hurricane is a way God gives us to have a learning experience. One Islamic leader wrote that if we study carefully the painful incidents of our life that occur in such specific circumstances and judge them in the context of our behavior, we can realize that most of these painful events also mark milestones in our progress, in our knowledge of the nature of life in the universe. Many times it has happened that a sudden shock or blow in our life becomes that turning point. Mild punishments are to discipline us and to save us from more severe punishments from God. Those who are mindful take advantage of such lessons, such occurrences, and change their behaviors, but those who are not mindful or not watchful just cry and complain, and finally they meet even more severe consequences. However, this Islamic scholar then qualified everything he had written before and said, "We cannot say for sure that every natural disaster is a divine punishment." He said, "Hardships and painful events can have many causes, and it is not fair to consider them all lessons from God." Well, I appreciate the Islamic writer's statement that suffering has many different causes, and it's not fair to consider them all God trying to teach us how to live moral lives. I do not believe that God or nature is trying to teach us a lesson with a hurricane. Now, Jewish religious teachers have also debated this issue. The book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, is an example. In the book, Rabbi Harold Kirshner describes how his son had suffered from a rare disease and had died in his teens. The rabbi decided, out of this experience, he decided that God is not all powerful. The rabbi said, "Can you accept the idea that something happened for no reason? That there is randomness in the universe? Can you accept the idea that God is not all powerful? Can you accept the idea that God wants justice and fairness, but cannot always arrange for them? Misfortune is as unacceptable to God as it is to us." Rabbi Kirshner warned that many religious leaders take an intellectual approach to suffering. In a state of emotional distance and separation from the facts and the practicalities of the real world, these theologians and philosophers and intellectuals, they defend God instead of trying to comfort people. Thus, Kushner said, is a form of insanity, intellectual insanity. God, Rabbi Kushner said, is not all powerful. Some things, like a hurricane, happen, he believes, for no reason. So there are many religious views about how we should react to a hurricane. A Christian says we should see such disasters as a test from God. A Buddhist says we should use natural disasters as an opportunity to become more detached from our material possessions. An Islamic leader says God may be trying to teach us a lesson. And a rabbi says that God is not all-powerful, and natural disasters like hurricanes are random events that happen for no reason. Well, how do Unitarian Universalists answer this question? 150 years ago, one woman who was raised a Universalist said something like this: "I do not know why such things happen, But I do know that Universalists believe in the goodness of all people. When a natural disaster occurs, we should organize to help others. The name of this Universalist woman was Clara Barton. After the American Civil War, Clara Barton worked for 4 years trying to locate missing soldiers so that families would know what happened to their loved ones. In 1869, exhausted by her work, 48-year-old Barton visited Europe to rest. She arrived in Glasgow and she enjoyed Scotland and England and then spent several weeks resting in Geneva. While in Geneva, she met with a delegation of Swiss business people. Barton was fascinated by the story a gentleman told her. In 1859, 10 years before, a 30-year-old businessman named Henry Dunant of Geneva, Switzerland, was traveling in northern Italy. There he saw the casualties left by a battle between the French and the Austrians. 40,000 young men were dead or wounded. Towns and villages were hastily turned into open-air hospitals. Dunant was horrified at the lack of food, the lack of water, of doctors and medical supplies, and he set about recruiting the help of the local people and procuring bandages and food. He sent his coach to bring supplies, and he wrote his friends to bring aid. He labored for 3 days, and then he returned home to Geneva exhausted. What he had seen in this battlefield deeply disturbed Dunant and caused him to formulate a radical new concept of charitable action. He emphasized the need for training volunteers and the necessity for international cooperation to help injured soldiers. Prominent citizens of Geneva set about creating a new organization. The sign that was chosen was that of the Swiss national flag, but the colors were reversed. A red cross on a white field became the symbol of impartial help for the distressed. So in 1870, while Clara Barton was in Europe, war broke out between France and Germany. She joined the Red Cross workers from Geneva. She saw the huge Red Cross storehouses in Basel. She wrote that the Red Cross was able to accomplish in 4 months what the United States had been unable to accomplish in 4 years during the Civil War. Returning to the United States, Clara Barton made it her mission to get the United States to establish an American Red Cross. Starting in 1877, Barton was now age 56 and living in Washington, D.C. She wrote and she published a pamphlet on the Red Cross and gave talks about the organization to anyone who would listen. Convinced that without an immediate practical application, the Red Cross would never succeed in America, she added to its mission. She told people that the American Red Cross would not only help during times of war, not only help on the battlefield, it would also rescue ordinary citizens from disasters such as floods. In May of 1881, she established a national Red Cross organization. One of the first local chapters of the Red Cross was opened in Rochester, New York, by the Unitarian Susan B. Anthony, who viewed it as an opportunity to get women involved in a potentially powerful organization. In the same year, 1881, President Chester Arthur came out in support of the organization. In early 1884, the Ohio River flooded. 63-year-old Clara Barton left Washington for Pittsburgh to survey the damage and to appeal for donations. Once money, barrels of clothing, and gifts of food began to arrive, she left for Cincinnati to determine the most urgent need. Cincinnati lay under 71 feet of water. The American Red Cross supplemented the federal government's work, providing warm clothing, bedding, and food. Barton rented a large river steamer. She had a big iron cross prepared, and she painted it red and placed it on the steamer, and traveled the Ohio River and later the Mississippi River, providing aid for 3 months. When I was a child, my mother worked as a social worker for the Phoenix Red Cross. When I lived in Washington, D.C. for many years, near Washington, D.C. for many years, I served as a volunteer on an advisory board whose job was to keep our blood supply safe. The Red Cross supplies half of the blood in the United States. The people I worked with were highly ethical, highly responsible people. Now, unfortunately, in the last few years, the National Red Cross Board has been dominated by business persons, and the national leadership is made up of business people who tend to focus more on image and fundraising than in actually helping people. But the rank and file Red Cross, the workers out in the field, the volunteers, the people that we see on the news working in the shelters in Texas and in Louisiana, these people continue to provide aid in the spirit of the Universalist founder of the Red Cross, Clara Barton. Today in Washington, her home is now the Clara Barton National Historic Site, run by the National Park Service. In 1921, on the 100th anniversary of her birth, the Women's National Missionary Association of the Universalist Church purchased the home in North Oxford, Massachusetts, in which Clara Barton was born. The birthplace home was restored as a museum, and it can be visited today. Why are there natural disasters? In this church, each of you are free to make up your own mind. Think about your experiences. Remember the books you've read. Think about the teachers that you have known. Then, based on your own wisdom and experience, you decide what you believe. And whatever you decide, I invite you to remember Clara Barton as an example of the religious response to such events. On Friday, September 1st, an editorial appeared in the Tampa Bay Times with the headline, "Clara Barton, Not the Confederacy, is a Gold Standard for Public Memorials." It said, "Barton is renowned for her achievements, of course, but also for her selflessness and her conviction that all were deserving of the aid that she could help provide." I would add that as Unitarian Universalists, we can be proud that she was raised in a Universalist church.